Evan,
sir.
What's your favorite thing about Seattle, Washington? You've been to Seattle several times.
My family's there. My half-sister lives in Renton, just a suburb of Seattle. Love seeing her. Love seeing the kids. Yeah, easily that's my favorite part.
Yeah, it's always been a city, because I grew up in Portland, that I have felt rivalry with, and then as an adult, have really come to admire as a place. I have thought of it as America's seventh best city forever, and I will continue to think of it that way.
It's quite mature of you.
Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals, America's seventh best city edition. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
I'm Evan Davis. Yes, the Seattle rain is our subject of part four of NWSL season preview week. We had the wonderful Silves of Shea Butter FC join us to get into the nitty gritty of how Laura Harvey expects this team to function when it really kind of doesn't look so different from its composition last year, barring a Lynn Biondolo or two.
I feel like this Seattle team is got a lot of questions that I'm going to need to see answered. And I think our conversation really expands upon that.
Yeah.
So here's Silves.
Joining us for our preview of the Seattle rain, she is the co-host of the Shea Butter FC podcast, which you can get wherever you get podcasts. And she is just one of the great bon vivants of the game. Please welcome the one and only Silves to the show. Hi, Silves.
Hello. I don't get called bon vivants very often about many things. So yeah, my mom thinks I'm smart. That's about it. So yeah, so there's that.
Yes.
And she's way smarter than all of us, so I guess that's a compliment. So.
Yeah. If we can agree with something about your mom thinks, then we're off to a great start, it seems.
I appreciate it.
All right. The Seattle rain, not a great team last year. 13th place.
No, it was not a great season.
A little bit better on performances, maybe, if the underlying data is to be believed, but not much. This was a season to forget, a rare season to forget, if you think about it, across the entire history of the club. Laura Harvey, who has coached, what, eight of their 12 seasons, some crazy number like
Something like that, right? You can take Utah years and then the year off, yeah. It's not the block.
She is the Seattle rain in a great many ways.
Yeah, very much so.
How much responsibility do you feel like she bears for the performance that we saw from the club last year?
So I think coaches always bear some responsibility, right? Particularly a coach that experience. She's won several Coach of the Year awards, winningest coach in the league's history, if I'm not mistaken. So I think there is some expectation that a coach of Laura Harvey's caliber, reputation, is able to take something, not necessarily a great roster, and at least get something out of it. And I think just last year it felt like that was an impossible task. And while there were things maybe she could have tweaked and done differently, I just think, you know, not having ownership, so not really being able to get the pieces that you want. And as good as she is, she's always had talent on those teams. And so I think really just not being able to get the player profiles we wanted, keep the players we did. Yeah, I think it's somewhat on her, but not a ton, in my opinion.
She has evolved tactically from her first go-around with the team. She runs a different kind of system with the modern reign than she did during the glory days of Kim Little and Jess Flishluck in her prime. What do you chalk that up to? Why has she changed her tactical approach since she came back to the team in 2021? And how did that manifest on the field last year? Do you still feel like this is the right way for her to be trying to build her teams to play, or does she need to think about evolving again?
So I think in terms of evolving, so I think one of the big knocks, and probably there is still some, right, is development, particularly of younger players. I think, though, the tempo has sped up at some points, even though I think we were really into possession and movement. I think particularly maybe like Fishlock's MVP season. I think the pace has picked up this go round. I think we could see some of what she was trying to do during her Utah stint and maybe just didn't have all the right pieces together. And obviously there was other things going on with that franchise at the time. But you could kind of see the bits and pieces of like, oh, okay, this is kind of her evolution and what she's trying to do and how she's trying to score goals. Maybe not quite as much suffer ball as before, as we like to call it. But yeah, and I think you have to adapt or die. So I think there are some principles that she still wants to stick to. I think I remember hearing Stacey Stoney in an interview saying, you still have to defend. I know it's the NWSL, but you do still have to defend. And so I think there are some defensive principles she'll always want to stick to. And we weren't awful on defense. Like, we didn't get blown out a ton, but it was just, you can't score, right? Defending is great, but at some point you have to score. So yeah, I think that's sort of been an adapt-to-die. I also think that Sten is the U20 coach, brief though it was, really gave her some perspective. And she saw a lot of the talent that's now coming through. And so I think that also got her wheels turning about the game's changing. Like, it's going to speed up. It's, you know, a lot more about stretching what midfielders we do or don't have coming through, you know, this league or versus internationally. So yeah, I think that helped with her adapting too.
One of the main issues, I think, that dominated the season last year for Seattle was the very slow sale of the club to the Carlyle Group. How much do you think that played a part in the low totem place on the in the table at the end of last season? And how would you sort of grade their offseason so far?
Yeah, I think more than anything, not having an ownership group hinders what you can do, right? Think about, you know, the day-to-day business of running a club and just having to sustain that, not knowing where your money and revenue are coming from, but also the ability to roster build, the ability to keep or, you know, attract staff. It's luckily we have, you know, facilities and things of that nature, but just everything you do contingent on having ownership, having people who can sign a check or sign off on something. And we just didn't have that. It didn't allow us to, you know, reshape our staff, how we wanted to do things. And having it be that late in the season, we were pretty much up a creek, right? We couldn't really compete for players in that way. So I think with this offseason and having that ownership, obviously we've made some competitive moves. We have, I guess, reconfigured our staff, our front office, things of that nature, adding roles, really making it rain specific. So obviously both teams are, you know, Carlyle Group, it's one Seattle, you know, but that there's a really specific focus on the rain because they've been successful and they've been consistently so since the beginning of the league. There's something to having an OG franchise and sort of a stalwart one that I do think the Carlyle Group understands. And so I think they've made some savvy moves. I definitely think they've also made some moves that, you know, you can look into a little more, you know, push back a little more. And there's some moves yet to be made, but yeah, I think they've become an incredible stabilizing voice, force incredibly quickly. So just, yeah, I'm excited.
Fair amount of player movement this offseason in terms of losses of key components. Bethany Balser traded back in the summer to Louisville. Alana Cook to Kansas City. Jalen Howell traded in the offseason to Gotham. Ciara King, TBD, but she doesn't seem like she's coming back to the club. And Quinn is going back to Canada to join the Northern Super League. And then on the other side of it, Lynn Biondolo is the other piece coming back in the Jalen Howell trade. Madison Curry signed in free agency. Emily Mason and Maddie Dalian to college pickups who could potentially see a fair amount of minutes come the regular season. Given that there has been so much traffic in each direction, do you get a picture yet of what the Carlyle Group / the Sounders and Leslie Gallimore, the GM, and Harvey are envisioning for what they want this club to be in 2025?
Yeah, I think in 2025, there is an element of, okay, we're going to rebuild. I think the mentality is, granted, we did not finish last, but it'd be pretty hard to be worse than we were. I think we've made enough changes for that not to happen. I think there is a desire to have a long-term build, so 2, 3, 4 years out. Obviously, we've got a lot younger, on about half that roster, two-thirds of that roster. So clearly, there's a long-term vision, but I think for this year, it's kind of following the trend, right? Get somebody who can score you goals. You know, get some speed, try to stretch the field. We have a midfield, it's a little bit older, right? It's not going to likely go 90 every game. You know, and you're hopeful people will be able to step up. Younger players, less experienced players will be able to step up. And maybe you make some moves in the summer. I think, you know, I don't think we get all of our players from Europe, but I think we are a pretty European team. So I think there might be some eyes towards, you know, getting players, a lot of players off contract in European football after the Euros this summer. So I think it's going to kind of be a free-for-all anyway. So maybe reinforce. And then Yeah, I think particularly with signing someone like Bowie, just really understanding that at least up front, there's going to be speed, that ability to stretch somebody to complement Wemby Ndola. So yeah, it's going to be, you know, very interesting. And then I will probably talk about it, but I got to see Maddie Curry a decent amount last year. So I do think that's a really good pickup. She's very much a Rain player, in my opinion. Just utility, can do whatever you need on that back line. Very coachable. We'll get stuck in. So yeah. And then I still think we probably need to do some work at the keeper position, but I'm good with Miller for now. Like, she's a solid, like, until you can get yourself situated starter, in my opinion.
Last season, the Rain only had one outfield player, I believe, who played over 2,000 minutes that was in a peak age season. So this roster is really designed sort of fountain of youth, Laura Harvey, Seattle, like, rechanneling 30-plus-year-olds into and squeezing out the last of what you can. And then a lot of, like, really young, promising types like Jordan Bug. Do you view this upcoming season as more transitional? Because the roster doesn't feel, like, designed yet to like, win now.
Yeah, I think we did the win now thing and came very, very close to pulling it off, and it doesn't work. And I don't know if we felt great about it, but I also understand why we did it. So, yeah, I think this is definitely with an eye towards being consistently good and really putting in place, I think, veterans that can still play, but I think veterans that can also teach younger players.
We're all children to us.
Sorry, education, major person. But, you know, teach these younger players how to be professional, what to expect, the pace and the speed of the league, the week in, week out grind, how do you train, how do you focus, all of those things that, yes, your coach and your staff and the team can set you up for success, but there is no replacement. Again, Ed, Morgan Education, I believe in mentorship very, very, very deeply. Like, you can't really replace that. And so I think really bringing in young players, really being able to almost pair them off and be like, okay, this is how we're going to do it. This is what you should emulate as you go forward. And I think we're one of the, I guess, historically one of the better franchises to be able to do that, you know, in terms of treating players well, that kind of thing. I don't think that culture goes away. And so really building that so that then you can attract those last pieces that you'll need over the next couple of years. But that's the trend anyway. I think everybody's sort of in this two or three year build. I mean, I don't think we're an exception to that.
So if we think about the roster going just basically position group by position group, you mentioned Cassie Miller, another player who came over from Gotham. Claudia Dickey was the starter last year after Fallon Tullis-Joyce had moved on the year before. Dickey wouldn't say had the most memorable of seasons between the sticks. You led your comments about goalkeeper with Miller. Do you sense that this might be Miller's job to lose?
I think I did when the trade happened. I'm not sure. I think they've both started in the preseason. I didn't watch our first game. I know the second game, it was Dickey, at least for the first half. So yeah, I don't know. I think she has a little more experience. I think I trust her a little more right now, but I don't think either feels like a permanent solution. Having said that, I thought that about Dickey and she got called in. So what do I know? I might be looking at different things than the US team. But yeah, I think I'd have to see a lot of improvement from Dickey, which is very possible. She's pretty young. But I think neither is maybe the number one long term, and they're, you know, sort of biding their time.
Jordan Bug is highly touted if we move on to the back line. Is she a day one starter? And if so, what does that back line look like?
Yes. Who she will be paired with. I think this is really a make or break season for Shea Holmes, right? I think she sort of came into the squad through the previous iteration of the Challenge Cup, being able to play those games, really get a lot of playing time. I think there's some upside there. I think I would need to see, she's not super duper fast. And so I think it's really about anticipation, being able to track for her, things of that nature. I like Jordan Bug because she's young, but she's really calm. And she was really important to the U20s in that third place finish. And that's a team that had Lysentner and had, Giselle and some of these, and Emery, obviously her teammate at Seattle as well. These players that play consistently now at a professional level. And so I think there is something to these young players really getting a lot of time at the professional level this young and seeing, you know, different styles, but also just the, you know, the physicality, the next sort of level of maturation that they need to get to. And I don't think she's an exception, but she's just incredibly calm. I think she's pretty good anticipation for somebody her age. Obviously, I think there's things that she can, you know, work on. And I think maybe that's also part of keeping Lou for one more year. I don't think she's going to play a ton, but that speaks to, you know, that mentoring that we were I was talking about earlier. So I expect good things from her. I expect to see some improvement in terms of just her distribution, things of that nature, and just, I think, really fortifying sort of her defensive skills.
Emily Mason signed a one-year deal out of Rutgers. If you look at her performance with Rutgers against ranked teams, top 25 teams last season, was a pretty decent defender, like 1-6 defensive duels at a 65% clip. Not bad for a center back. Is there a window here where she could fight for a starting place, or do you feel this is more of a depth signing?
I think by the end of the season, you could very well see Thug and Mason. I don't think it starts off that way. Like I said, I think this is a make or break for Shea Holmes. I think just with her experience, and we're fairly loyal, like, we'll give you your chance. So I think she'll at least get that first half of the season, unless they just see Mason make that leap in training, which is also very possible. Like, I do think there's a lot more college players who are going to come in ready this season without the draft, I guess, for people. But so I think she will be there by the end of the year. But I do think there's something to getting up to speed. I know she's played some in the preseason. So, but yeah, I think it'll start with Holmes and Bug, or maybe McLaren. We'll see. But and then I think they get younger as the season goes along.
Madison Curry, brought in as a free agent, probably has a lock on a starting job. Who is the other fullback?
If she's healthy, Ryan Brown would be my guess. The question is, who plays on what side, right?
Right. And it is interesting how positionally flexible a lot of these defenders are. We've seen Holmes, McLernan, Lauren Barnes at times, and others move centrally and move wide. So Harvey has options. But yeah, to your point, it seems like there isn't a clear picture of who's good enough to soak up the starting minutes, especially in those first couple of months. But you feel, what did you like out of Ryan Brown's pseudo cup of coffee in 2024 that makes you think that she's in the lead?
Right. So I think she had finally gotten a grasp on sort of the pace of this league, like lots of confrontation, things of that nature. I don't think her distribution's that bad. Admittedly, I haven't gotten to see as much of it as I'd like. Obviously, for pace, probably the best we have. Like, I think she's probably faster than Curry. Not that I think Curry's super speedy, but fast enough. But yeah, we don't have a ton of speed back there. And she's probably one of our faster players, if not our fastest defender. So she does offer us that. So she's probably gonna, well, I think Curry can also get stuck with the 1v1s. But yeah, I think she's gonna be asked to do a job. I think she's gonna be asked to push up and join in. I think, you know, whether Huerta comes back or not, my guess is yes. But I think that's more about Leon. But yeah, so you have that extra person for half a season as well. Once she comes back, that ability to push up, we love a right back who pushes up and can get that ball in the box and cause some chaos, and you know, you get that rebound goal, things of that nature. So, or get the headers, right? We've got people up there now that can you score with their head, hopefully. So yeah, I think she's going to get into the mix, but I think helping hold that side defensively is going to be big for her as well. Yeah, and I'll be interested to see if she plays on the same side as Jordan Bug or not.
The center of the park. Last year, the three highest minute getters for the Reign were 37-year-old Jess Fishlock, 33-year-old Ji So-Yun, and at the time, 30-year-old Anghara James Turner. They have not gotten any younger. Is that the central three you expect to begin the season?
Because, of course, part of this is framed by the fact that Verona Kolatsko recently,
is out for the year with her Achilles. Happy healing, or healing to her. And really an engine and somebody we could definitely use for depth. Yes, I think the only caveat might be Vandergaat. Mm-hmm. Like I said, she wasn't really out for injury purposes. It was for personal reasons last year, and obviously the team gave her all the space and time she needed for whatever was happening. But by all accounts, seems to be back in training. Focus looks really good, and I think we were always trying to figure out where we wanted her. You know, I think if she's playing that six, it's more of a Kira Wall style six. I don't know if she's the faster that Kira Wall is, but like she can get stuck in though. So I'm super interested to see what that looks like and how she plays off of them. But I would imagine at some points in the season, particularly pre-Euros, you're going to see those three, because it's also about, you know, getting them up to speed for their summer as well. And there's really no replacing Fishlock's experience. I think it's just a matter of managing her minutes.
Sam Meza, is she going to have a bigger role? Not hard to have a bigger role, but is she going to have a big role on this team this year?
Yeah, I do. And I think she's gotten some decent minutes in preseason as well. I didn't think we'd go get her until her season was over. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be very honest with you. So the fact that they went and got her early off of her loan deal with Dallas Trinity, which she was one of the best players in the Super League as well. So she was having a very good, I guess, half season, our first half of the season. I do. I think she's the creative. I think she's our, obviously, I think Adamas is audacious too, but I think she's got a bit of audacity and is used to playing in high stakes games, obviously coming from the UNC program. I'm always a fan of internationals to play for other countries. So it gives you a little variety of perspective, things of that nature, because I believe she plays for Mexico, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, I'm super excited. I think she was a player I was really excited when we drafted her the previous season. But, you know, really getting that experience at a professional level, really getting herself acclimated, and us going to get her early probably leads me to believe that she's going to get some starts here.
In attack, there is a clear understanding of probably two positions at the moment, Biondolo and Jordan Huitema. Below them, Ji So-yun, who played a ton last year, but really began to show her age. And with Latsko out, there aren't too many players who can back up G. So it feels like she's probably going to carry a lot of playing time. And then the opposite wing is sort of up for grabs, it seems, between Emery Adamas, who had a very interesting teenage campaign last year, Anna Maria Chernogorchevich, Narilia Mondesir, really struggled in their brief appearances at the end of the year. And then there's the young Maddie Dalian coming out of UNC. How does this attack get optimized so that you don't have to be sitting here a year from now frustrated why Seattle once again did not seem to be able to score the goals that they needed? Then Biondolo, that sort of explains itself. But with Haitema's less than mobile style in the nine, to be bouncing off of someone who is highly mobile like Biondolo, and then a series of right wingers where it just feels like there's a lot of question marks, and then a player like G, who maybe doesn't have the speed to play out of pressure in the way that she used to in the old days. Like, how does this all start to come together?
Well, so I think it will be interesting. I think Dalian will get a decent amount of time, or even Adamas. I think with Lynn's ability to stretch, you know, and pull those defenses out, they'll be in Quebec. I think the speed of Dalian, she's fast. Like, I saw her at a preseason. There is some serious speed there. And so I do think that can keep pace with Lynn, which will be helpful. And maybe you switch it and let her make the secondary runs. I don't know what her movement looks like exactly. I didn't get to watch a lot of her in college. So yeah, I think the big question will be Huitema, right? Like you said, she's not necessarily one to create that movement off the ball. I think, again, if we can get our fullbacks, maybe particularly that right-sided fullback, involved in the attack more, I think there's a lot of chances for her in the air. She's not awful. In the air, she's clearly willing to get clattered. Like, she and Emily Fox die every game. But yeah, so willing to get clattered. I do think she's willing to go up and do that kind of dirty work. And maybe we're tactically positioning her in a way where it doesn't necessarily have to be a run, but she can make enough slight movement in behind, or, you know, Biondolo pulls a defender, that kind of thing. So I think that's a problem for Laura Harvey to solve. It's obviously a problem they want to solve. We keep extending Huitema. So they are insistent on something being there, and she is still young, and sometimes it really does hit later. But, and maybe not having the pressure, it's obvious it's going to be Lynn carrying a lot of the goal scoring burden, and willingly so. That's what she does. So I think not having that pressure on Huitema might do her some good, where she can kind of just play off of you know, the other frontline talent. And yeah, as for G, I think, you know, this is one of those where maybe this isn't, you know, with an eye towards this season. It's just kind of get through and see if you can do that. You know, maybe you're working with a Mezza or somebody like that to be able to step in and spell her as well. And again, maybe you have an eye towards the summer window. But that feels like a more long-term solution. I think there is a search for tens on several teams and attacking mids on several teams. So I don't think we're alone in that. But if you're going to kind of bear it at least for half a season, there are worse players. And if you surround her with enough, I think you can do that. She doesn't have a major tournament this year, so maybe some rest has helped. But yeah, I think that's a long-term problem to solve. And I don't think that's a long-term solution. But.
All right. So we've run through the team. You're Laura Harvey. What's keeping you up at night? What's the thing that you are most stressed about going into this season?
As Laura Harvey, I'd have a nicer place. We'll see. I have a lot less anxiety in life right now. If I'm Laura Harvey, I think that midfield. I think that midfield and maybe that keeper position are keeping me up at night because I don't really have a quick fix for that midfield, right? Like you said, I'm relying on my, hey, we've done this for a decade. Like, I know what you can do. And I am one that I don't necessarily think when you get 30, you're washed. But you have to know each player in those circumstances. But yeah, I think she's like, that really hinges on everybody being healthy and okay, at least through June. And there's no real guarantees of that in this league. It's a very fluky league. I see somebody the other day was like, we should gamble on the NWSL. And I was like, that seems like the most degenerate choice you can make. It's the worst league to gamble on, dude. Don't do that to yourself. But
it's real win big or win lose big. Yeah. You know,
yeah, I'm just like, it's a little too much chaos and the numbers don't play out. Yeah. And it's just really, yeah, I don't know if that's a choice.
Preseason betting lines are always bad.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, that feels bad. But yeah, I think that midfield, and she's had some great midfielders. So, in fact, both of her MVPs have been midfielders. But, you know, so I think not necessarily having that at the level that she wants, sort of in the prime, the way she wants or is accustomed to having, will probably keep her up until they're able to figure that out long term.
Do you think they go and make a big signing in the summer? You suggested that it's a possibility, but does that feel likely?
Yeah, I think they make a necessary signing. I don't know if I'm always on big name. It just very much depends. I think they need a player that fits. And I think that this gives them enough time to see where they are and what profile would make a lot of sense, whether they go and reinforce through the college draft or college players and signing them. Like I said, I think the style they might want to play, there are some of that in Europe, not necessarily like big names, but some of, you know, those maybe second coefficient teams. So yeah, I think there's stuff out there. I think South America is also a good place to look, but again, they also have a tournament. So I think there's going to be a lot of, once you come back in August, a lot of signings, a lot of reshuffling in women's soccer in general. But yeah, I do, or maybe they, you know, go chips in the table. We do have some money. So I think they do push some chips in the table and try to get a player of quality in that midfield.
Where do you think they're going to finish? And then we'll lay all of our cards out.
I think they're good enough to sneak in. Like, I think that seventh or eighth, probably eighth.
Eighth?
Yeah, I think I'd say eighth. Like, I think, and I think they can be an eighth place team that shakes. Like, I think they can give the first place team a game, right? Like, I don't think, bless Chicago, but like, I don't think they'll have that experience, right? Like, I think it's a very close, like, one goal game against the one seed. Mm-hmm. Just because I think Laura Harvey knows how to put something together for a tournament game, right? Like a one-off.
Full disclosure, I have them 11th.
As do I, yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay.
For all the promising talent that's there, it's a weird distribution of ages in the team, and like relying on a bunch of 30-year-olds to be your engine is terrifying to me. And frankly, I don't rate Haitema that highly. Biondolo is going to have to do a lot of work to cover for Evan.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. And I think also, I agree that Jordan Bug has a great deal of upside. We just need to see it over 2,000 minutes. So that's just sort of
She didn't play a lot.
Right. It's a high band of variance, especially for that back line, trying to figure out who plays where and how do they play with each other. So, and your point is, you know, Dickey was someone who I thought wasn't a liability, but she wasn't a benefit. And so didn't even cross my mind that there might actually be challenge from Cassie Miller there. But if what you say is true, then yes, maybe there's some concern between the sticks as well. So 11th feels right to me along with Eric. So, and what are basically like the 90th percentile outcomes for the players, for the tactics, for the signings in the summer? How does it all work to get there?
I think we're a destination. Like, I don't think it's like, like, we have a very good reputation. So, like, I think there's more we could be doing on off the field part. But, like, we take care of our players. We have our own facilities. Like, you're good, right? We have, singular ownership. So, you'll get, paid. It's a good place to live. Like, I don't think that's the issue. But, yeah, I don't see that happening without some kind of major move, particularly in that midfield, I think, to really solidify that. But with what we currently have, I'm struggling to get us a home game right now.
Yeah, I think that, like, the 90th percentile, as I thought about this, was Jordan Huytema just simply isn't Jordan Huytema and becomes, with Biondolo, sort of an irresistible 1-2 punch where what had previously been a not particularly mobile striker starts drifting in and creating space and allowing the stuff she does well, playing with her back to goal, to really create a lot of shooting opportunities for Alin Biondolo, who maintains her health on Seattle turf in her 30s and just puts together like a 2,200-minute season where she is as lethal as she's ever been. She kind of needs to like roll back the years like Mo Salah is rolling back the years to kind of have Seattle in second for me.
Yeah, I think the Huytema shout is a fair one. And maybe you're right. Like, Lynn sort of unlocks her, and she is the back-to-goal player that Lynn doesn't necessarily want to be, or isn't.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like, I want Lynn Williams facing my goal. Right. Sorry, Lynn Biondolo facing my goal.
And
she's a good, and Huytema can pass the ball. Like, she can pass out of that scenario really well. And I don't know, sprinkle in whatever she does for Canada, because she always seems to score.
Right. I think, yeah, if you can get Dalian to maximize her potential and use your wingers basically as mobile decoys, potentially even to like slow your opponent's pressing game down, which maybe can give Ji So-yeon a little bit more time on the ball to pick a pass, then maybe there's something there too, just to have another outlet option. But again, you need, as you've been saying this whole episode, Silves, you need mobility and you need speed in order to cover for where that lacks elsewhere. But, I mean, this is the NWSL, so who knows? It could happen.
Anything is possible in this league. Yeah, I think we got faster. I don't think we got super, super fast, especially in some positions. Right. And I kind of think that's the name of the game right now. Even DC doesn't actually play right, like they like you have to move the ball, and we were like the slowest team last year, both in terms of just straight, I think, in line, but also just the pace and which we played. So again, maybe we can't play any slower, so that's also advantageous.
You can hear Silves on Shea Butter FC wherever you get podcasts. Go to Shea Butter FC, is ShaeButterFC.com?
Yes, it's .com.
Yeah, where you can find all of their content, living in one place. And If you get to hang out in the Angel City press box, you'll see her there too.
I'll be there on the 15th.
Silves, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
The one and only Silves, ladies and gentlemen.
She's the best.
She really is the best. And I hope that, I don't know, things came into a little bit more focus around Seattle for you.
Mm-hmm.
I know they did for me. But in the meantime, that's going to be it for us today. One more episode to go today in NWSL Season Preview Week with the San Diego Wave. So check out your feed for that. In the meantime, rate us, review us, follow us, tell all your friends about us, rate us 5 stars if you're going to rate us at all. For only $6 a month or $60 a year, you can subscribe to our Patreon and get 4 bonus episodes every single month, including access to our Discord server and our semi-regular YouTube live streams. Follow us on social media at XOwnGoals. That's the letter XOwnGoals. And if you believe we've made an own goal, please email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. Tune into today's other episodes on the Houston Dash and the San Diego Wave, and then we'll be back tomorrow with more NWSL Season Preview Week.
As they say in Seattle, bye!